Special coverage from the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference is brought to you by Victoria Gold Corp.
Welcome back to SOAR Financially. Welcome back to the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the @JRMiningGuy on Twitter and the CEO of the SOAR Financial Group. Really appreciate you joining us here on the floor of the conference. And I'm joined by Lynette Zhang, Chief Market Strategist over at ITM Trading.
Yes.
Known quantity on the channel. Really happy to have you back.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's been interesting to get here. It's like a lot of people had troubles with the snow and then there was fog here yesterday. It's an exciting conference. Like, there's good energy.
Oh, very good energy. And I love Vancouver anyway. And frankly, coming from Phoenix with all of the sun, this weather is a nice little change.
Absolutely. And you're close to the ocean and it's refreshing.
Yes, it is.
Although this morning it was a fire apparently in North Van. The smoke is coming over. It's terrible.
Okay.
We've got about 20 minutes to talk a bit about like everything we can.
Absolutely.
But I want to focus on what is actually trending, what is happening, what should we be paying attention to. And I think the topic of your workshop, I think, is quite a good like pathway to go down on. It's the currency of life cycle, or the life cycle of currencies.
Exactly.
We should talk about that because de-dollarization was a big trend. It disappeared. Where are we at?
Well, okay. The de-dollarization continues. But, you know, it's really interesting because, like everything, currencies have a life cycle. I'm 69. My granddaughter's 8. I guarantee you nobody's going to look at her and go, oh, she's going to be 70, or look at me and go, oh, she's going to be 9. And why would currencies be any different? So the unfortunate part is that we are at the end of this currency's life cycle. And I say that for two key reasons. Number one, because the key tool that central bankers have to control the rate and speed of inflation are interest rates. And every single time they've attempted to raise them after lowering them to zero for 15 years, it has been a big fat fail. And we are in the process of another fat fail right this moment. Just look at what's happening in the 10-year U.S. Treasury market, which is supposed to be the foundation of the global financial system. And the lack of liquidity in that market, which means the inability to buy and sell in a narrow price range, I mean, that started back in 2015. So it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, the normal person can't see it. But the other reason why I say that we're at the end is that there's virtually officially no purchasing power left in the currency. So it's the public confidence that's retaining any value in those fiat monies. And the rapid inflation that the masses, like the public, has really experienced has made them start to question what's really happening. Because what do we hear from those in power? Everything's great. Look at the consumer, strong consumer. Boy, they've been shopping. And they've been taking on a lot of debt, too.
The amount of credit cards or new credit cards issued and all, it's just like skyrocketing.
Right. And also, though, the banks are starting to pull back in their lending and in their issuance of credit. So they're reducing what people can access. And we're starting to see them get very tight in the money front. And especially, too, with new regulations that are coming on board, there are a lot of issues that are happening. And for the Federal Reserve, we could very well see this as early as this spring, kind of a repeat of what happened in 2019, the last time they attempted to raise rates, not as rapidly as they've done recently.
Two and a quarter, I think, two and a half points, or 250 basis points, I think.
Exactly. And the money markets, the repo markets, which is really the money markets, froze. And then they started quantitative easing, printing money, dropped the interest rates back down. And the repo markets, which is key for the treasury markets and the money markets that people invest in, which they're mutual funds. And a lot of people say, well, isn't that safer? No, it's not safer. If at the rate that they're going, there will be nothing left in the reverse repo market by this spring. And that will force the Fed to pivot and drop rates. Whether or not that's going to happen, whether there'll be a crisis before that, my bet is that there probably will be something that will justify that move so that you're not really seeing what's happening.
Well, the bank term funding program is expiring around that same time as well.
Exactly.
So there are a lot of macro factors that sort of end, or like credit lines, let's call them credit lines,
yes,
that sort of expire at the end of March, at the end of the Q1.
Exactly.
Right? So how do you see that affecting? Because I think that's $160 billion market as well that needs to be refinanced.
Yes, but they're also now talking about expanding that and keeping that program going.
Of course.
Because they can't really afford to stop it, yeah, right? I mean, once you start something, starting may be easy, but stopping when people get used to it, when corporations get used to it, is very hard. And could that push us into the next crisis inside of an election year? I mean, we're in a very precarious position at this moment in time, and people need to get to safety.
I want to stay on the bond market for just a second longer.
Please.
And talk about it, like, because I think it's vital. Like,
it is.
Somebody mentioned, I think it might have been Simon Hunt, might have been somebody else, the bond market is the root of all evil. Right?
Well, it's debt. What is a bond?
Right?
Bond is
so,
debt.
I love that term because it's everything. If you look at everything, geopolitics, a lot of it just comes back to the bond market.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Like conspiracy theorist, I don't know.
Theorist, but...
Yeah. But it's interesting.
No, but it's true.
And we're talking about yields, the 10-year in particular. It's been quite volatile. And
yes,
you talked about using, kind of trading it as well. Volatility came to mind. Where do you see that the yield goes in your scenarios?
Well, in the short term, I see the yield going down. There's thus the Fed pivot because the system and the bond market is and the banking system is imploding right now. We can't see it because they've covered it up, but that started to become obvious last March and April, right? So anybody that thinks that those issues were solved, they aren't. The banks are sitting on a tremendous amount of debt. You know, it's like when interest rates go up, the market value of the bonds go down, right? So if the banks are valued with the bonds being at this level when they're really at this level,
just count.
You've got a huge problem. So first, I think we're going to see interest rates go down, but then I think we're going to see them spike.
Do you have a target rate in mind? Like, is there a yield target?
Well, you know, those are things that are beyond my control, but I was just going to say that was actually the number that I was going to say because I can't control that, but it wouldn't surprise me to see it at 10% by the end of the year.
So the next question, of course, that at 10% bond yields, like, what does that do to U.S. debt? And the whole, like, debt markets in general, like, what will happen? What are the ramifications of that happening? And well, how short-lived will that? Will it just be a one-day blip on the radar screen, or will that be a longer-term scenario? Because that could really break things.
Exactly.
Not just in a gentle way.
I don't think it's going to be a one-day blip because, again, we are at the very end of the cycle. I think it's going to be more pronounced because the other thing that they've been able to cover up so we can't see what's really happening are those big derivative bets against all those bonds, against all the credit, with all the zombie corporations that we have out there. And for those that aren't familiar with the zombie corporations, those are corporations that for at least 3 years have not been able to pay all the interest on the debt. And the banks not wanting that to the defaults to show up on their books, they just kept lending them money. But inside of this current market, where the banks are pulling back those credit facilities, the question is, are they going to allow that to continue? Can they afford to allow that to continue? Because what happens to the market value of not just the bonds, but the mortgages, the credit loans, everything, the entire system goes completely underwater at 10% when they were put in place, or much of it was put in place, at 0%. So, yeah, could that create the next financial crisis that they can't cover up? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting. Let's talk inflation.
I love that topic.
It's an interesting topic.
Yes, it is.
Are the inflation fears that we're seeing right now in the media warranted? Are you worried about inflation kicking back?
Oh.
I wouldn't say worried. Are you predicting inflation to be as sticky and even worse? So, like,
100% actually.
We had 3.1%. I think we're back at 3.9%.
Yeah.
Official
numbers.
We got to go by that. Like, their shadow stats. We all know.
And everybody
right.
can feel it.
Right.
It's a different topic. But let's talk about the inflation kicking back into a higher gear. Is that again, I used the term earlier, is that just a blip on the radar screen?
Or no.
Is that a trend that we're going to see continue in January, February, and of next month?
Well, you know, I just looked. One of the places that I look to kind of make a prediction of what the next most likely outcome is the monetary velocity, the number of times that money changes hands. And we've seen it peaked in 97. So that was at the point where taking on more debt actually did stimulate the economy. But since 97, that's been dropping in a very precipitous way. And one of the things that I've been paying attention to is when that turns in a precipitous way, and that has already turned. So, hey, I could be wrong. However, I do believe that the hyperinflation that we are going to see, and thus interest rates, and that inflation moving up a lot more rapidly, I believe that's already started. And that's witnessed by that shift in a very pervasive way in the monetary velocity chart, because that is completely trend shift. And that's the other thing, right? What I'm talking about are repeatable patterns that you see every time you reach the end stage of a currency's life cycle, just like the age, et cetera, of a human being, right? You can see these patterns and they just repeat over and over and over again. And you don't even need to necessarily understand them at a deep level, but if what you do understand is that whenever there is a pattern shift, it means something, right? Then you can see that we are at the end. And the movement upward in the monetary velocity, where's inflation going? They haven't conquered inflation. That's garbage. That is absolute garbage. I'll go on level. I'll put my technical neck on the line for that. So, yes, sticky? Yes, very sticky. And the difference between inflation and hyperinflation is simply the speed at which it happens.
Absolutely. Interesting topic, that inflation, like trueflation, if you want to believe that indicator, just dropped below 2%. So if you want to believe that as a leading indicator,
how
I do it the next FOMC meeting, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a joke. We're at a commodities conference, Lynette. We got to talk about precious metals in particular.
Absolutely.
Still the most dominant.
Absolutely.
Around. I think most, we got a gold company there, uranium, silver, gold, bull. I'm just looking around, just getting you a flavor.
Right.
But it's mostly gold, silver companies still.
Yes.
What's your expectation of the market for gold and silver for this year?
Well, for one thing, when you look at the charts, I think it's quite interesting that in almost every currency, gold, spot gold, which is a contract, is making new highs, right? The physical market, the physical only market, is where you see again, this trend, new highs, et cetera, that has broken out in a pervasive way. But even in the spot market, right, we have to understand that a rising gold price is an indication of a failing currency. And once people truly understand that the currency, the fiat money, the Canadian dollar, the U.S. dollar, the Japanese yen, it doesn't matter, take your pick. Once we realize that they are going away, they are hyperinflating away, then you look to real money, good money, commodity money. So that's one of the reasons why I really like to do this conference. We've got the miners, but there's a finite amount of gold and a finite amount of silver, whether it's in the ground or it's above the ground. Gold's the primary currency metal against which all other fiat money, so government debt-based money, is reset, right? So they'll suppress the price, but even in the U.S., we've got, what, a quadruple top? That just doesn't really happen.
That's a rare technical occurrence. Let's see.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's also an indication of the manipulation. So I do anticipate much higher even spot gold prices this year, because that breakout is already occurring. And when you look at, for all of the miners that are here, they're all in costs to mine. I mean, that kind of puts a floor underneath your gold prices, your silver prices. And look at the difference between the demand and supply, especially in silver, and the price. I mean, it's a joke.
Yeah.
It's an absolute joke. Me, I like the hard asset, right? gold, silver, real money. I hold it. I own it outright. It runs zero risk. And this, frankly, is the time to be running zero risk.
Absolutely. No, I mean, you can use it to pay action as well.
Yes, I can.
Coming back to failing currencies, one thought occurred to me while you were chatting. Is like the Japanese yen. Okay? Obviously a failed currency, but it's still around.
Well,
it doesn't seem like it's going to get abolished anytime soon. So I'm trying to like draw some parallels as well, see U.S. dollar. Maybe, like we were chatting with Matthew Piepenberg and Danielle DiMartino with just earlier, before the system fails, usually the currency fails, but it still means the U.S. dollar can be around. But we're having a debt-to-GDP ratio of 130, Japan is sitting at 250, which is insane, but they're still around. They're still relevant.
Why?
That's a very good question.
Did you ever ask yourself, why? Why are they still around?
I was going to work through that with you. It's like, why are they around, and do you see a similar scenario for the U.S. dollar?
Because they're around because the world has agreed that they should be around, right?
Yeah.
The Japanese yen failing, I mean, the topic of Japan and all of the experiments that they have been doing, and the whole world has been watching, I'm talking about central banks and governments, have been watching these experiments. And one after another has failed, and yet the entire world is following the example of these failed experiments. So how can they get away with that? Well, number one, for the Japanese yen versus all the other currencies, the world has agreed, right? But what has really held everything together, that's the confidence of the public, right? And it's hard. When they set up the system, they knew two key things. And I mean, they knew some other things as well, but two key things. Number one, that people marry the legal money of the state. So, hey, the dollar's been around since the day I was born. It can't possibly go away. So they keep the name even as they're robbing you of its purchasing power. And also they know that not one man in a million understands inflation. And we had central bankers come out, Christine Lagarde, Fed, and admit that they don't understand inflation. And they're the ones that are leading us, or leading us down the river, I would say. So, you know, again, the difference between inflation and hyperinflation is the speed of that inflation. And that's what created a problem for the central bankers, because when you have rapid inflation, people lose confidence and trust. And what did we see prior to 2020 was that there was a rise of populism, and there were more and more conflicts around the world with the public distrusting the governments. Well, that was quashed in 2020, but it's rising yet again. And what's interesting in the U.S. is they're talking about Joe Biden's form of populism versus Trump's form of populism. Okay. I mean, none of that makes any sense to me. I got to tell you, none of that really makes any sense to me, right? Populism, people don't care until it impacts them.
Yeah.
And so if you're in the elite class, or you're making enough income and you're able to withstand and weather the inflation that everybody is dealing with, then you're not really paying attention. But we're seeing right now a creep from those areas that have lost hope into those areas that still have hope because they have the money, right? That's changing. That's changing actually pretty rapidly. So we're really witnessing a rise in loss of confidence and populism.
One of my biggest fears doing these interviews, and I followed, like, is the timing thing. Like, we always talk about, okay, this is happening.
Right.
I'm worried about going to the loony bin just because it's never happened. Okay?
Well, so, it is happening.
That's why I'm looking at Japan, for example, because they're sitting at 250 debt to GDP ratio. The U.S. is at 130. My question is now, how much longer can the U.S. prolong the suffering, right, to get to this level? Because it's still a doubling in whatever it is we're doing right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Let's assume tomorrow we could have $60 trillion in U.S. debt.
Let's go back to that 10%, right?
Yeah.
Let's go back to that 10%. That would definitely, well, I can't say because it's not within my control, but my bet would be that the height of that and the loss of value in all of these debt-based instruments would absolutely have the potential to overwhelm the system and overwhelm the central banker's ability, but also position a crisis that, if we don't come together in community, could usher in the CBDCs, the central bank digital currencies, and the full control and surveillance economy. And that's why, you know, I do all these shows and I travel around the world talking about community, because we have to look at securing, we individuals, two levels of community, one local, so that if what happens in 2020 and you lose access to food, water, energy, security, barterability, wealth preservation, community, and shelter, you lose access to those things that enable you to sustain a reasonable standard of living. Okay, if you have a local community and you've created a relationship with this farmer, you know, or all of these different entities, well, if they know you, you're more likely to get what you need to sustain your family. But equally as important is the global community, because we vote with our wallets. We vote with our purses. My vote is for real money outside of the system. And if you leave your wealth in the system, it's easy to take, right? So when, I think we're very close. I think that, you know, I'm watching a disintegration in the banking system. I'm watching a disintegration at a very rapid level in the treasury bond, the foundation. So what we're, if you built a house and the foundation is moving like this, are you going to stay in that house?
I'm definitely in Japan, no. Ugh. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Yes, well.
Morris, do you mind?
Okay, well, you know, we're at a show. These things happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking at Japan, Japan has been showing the world the way to go, but it's that confidence of the public. They have to get the public to think that inflation is under control, that those that are driving this bus know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They have admitted that they don't know what they're doing, but what they are doing is getting us into a position so in this next crisis, they just give everybody these CBDCs. Look, we're going to take care of you, right? We're not bailing out the banks this time.
Here's the Fed coin. We're going to deposit money straight into your wallet.
Exactly. Exactly. The question is, will you then, because of course, if you're given free money, you're going to go spend it, right?
Yeah.
But are you going to replenish those accounts with the Fed Now accounts with the Fed coin or wherever you are in the world, whatever that CBDC is? Interesting experiment in Zimbabwe, where it's very interesting. And I just dug into this, and it was really virtually impossible for me to differentiate, because about a year ago, they came out with a 1 ounce gold coin to make sure that their purchasing power could be protected. But you have to say, okay, well, who can afford a 1 ounce gold coin in Zimbabwe? The 1% or maybe the top 10%. And so then they came out with a gold backed CBDC, but it's not convertible into the gold, right?
So
is it there? Exactly. What's the point? And I tried to find out how many of the CBDCs have gotten adopted versus the gold coins. I couldn't really figure that out.
Yeah.
I really couldn't find. I dug and dug and dug. So they're hiding that. The gold coins are doing great, and they're going into the population that'll get all of the wealth from the rest of the public. And I think that that is really a huge key for everybody. And that's why if you don't hold it, you don't own it, because it's just a contract. And any contract is only as good as the counterpart of that contract.
Absolutely. We all know it. It's like the money doesn't deposit in your account. What's the contract worth?
Exactly.
So, tough. Very last question, and it just came to me while we were chatting about gold coins. I was thinking Walmart and Costco are selling gold bars as well.
Voila!
What does that mean, and what do you make of that? Because the uptake is insane.
Oh, my God, yes, it is. As soon as they're listed, they're gone. And what that means is the public is becoming aware, and that is such a good thing. I love seeing that, because we need to be aware.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm not
attention to it. Actually, headline news.
Exactly. And I think that's what it is, because it's by the grace of the public that these people are in power. That's the point of the community. We come together. There's a lot more of us than there are of them. Why should they be ruling us? Have they done such a great job? Well, they have, of robbing us.
For 330 million people, something like that. So, absolutely. Lynette, phenomenal conversation. Last question, gold price end at the end of the, or next year at this conference.
Wow, okay. I would say, well, okay, we're breaking out right now, so we're well above 2,000. 3,500 would not surprise me. But again, does that reflect the true value of a physical ounce of gold and silver? No, it does not. So technically, we're breaking out, and I think we'll see substantially higher. But when you look in the physical-only market, that's where you see the truth.
Well, it's good.
Nice. Awesome. Lynette, where can we find more of your work? It's been a fantastic conversation.
Well, you can do a search on me, Lynette Zhang, and I'm on YouTube, I'm in Twitter, I'm all over the place. I do lots of interviews like this. It's been so much fun. And that's where you just search me.
Fantastic.
I'm around.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you joining us here on the floor of the conference. Everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I have. If you have any comments, leave them down below. Leave a like as well, and if you haven't done so, because I know 85% of you watching have not subscribed to the channel for some reason. Let's change that.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. My God.
Really appreciate that. And we'll be back with lots more here from the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. Thank you.